Welcome to episode 16 of Speak Beastie for July 17th, 2016.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Lizzie.
And our guest host today is Haley. Haley, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Haley. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm an intern here at MuggleNet. I'm on the content team. Woo. I'm a Gryffindor for my Hogwarts house. Gryffindor pride for life.
Nice.
And now I'm a Thunderbird, which I'm excited to be.
Hey, fellow Thunderbird.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Fellow Gryffindor.
Oh, yeah. You're a Gryffindor?
Me? Yes.
Oh, okay. Gryffindors, so we got...
best.
Hey now, let's not ensue an argument.
Let's not fight.
That's not what I'm here for.
House unity.
Yeah.
And now a message from our sponsor.
Stop the presses! Speak Beastie is on Patreon.com. With options ranging from $1 to $5 per month, you can become a sponsor of Speak Beastie and help us to bring you more from Newt's fantastic wizarding world. But wait, there's more! Rewards include access to bloopers and extended conversations. You can also help us decide on a discussion topic for future episodes. We want to thank all of our sponsors for helping us reach our first goal. Our next goal is to get merchandise. Check out patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more and become a sponsor today.
And now time for the Phoenix Register. So we have a good chunk of news that came our way. The first bit talks a bit... Who said that so begrudgingly?
What? I just said yeah.
You said it was very... But come... You're... Yeah.
Like, I just say things begrudgingly. I can't help it.
Yeah, so much news. Gosh.
I'm tired.
I know, it's okay. So, our first bit of news comes from Allison Sudol and Catherine Waterston about meeting and becoming the Goldstein sisters. Oh god, I've done this again. Is it Goldstein or Goldstein?
Oh.
It's like the Berenstain Bears thing.
Steen?
Yeah, I think Steen.
I want to say Steen. I'm going to say Steen.
I mean, has anyone... working for Fantastic Beasts said it out loud.
No, so. I'm not sure.
Could be anything.
Well, that aside,
the Goldstein.
Goldstein. But like, I'm not going to get into this. Never mind. Okay. So, Allison talked about meeting Catherine, said they sat down and something happened. She just looked at Catherine's face and felt incredibly empathetic towards her. In the scene, Tina was suffering, and Allison said she could see that, so she started playing with her hair, and it was a really emotional moment for them. And she also added, you know when you meet somebody and you just know, we don't know each other yet, but we will. Where have you been all my life? So I thought that was a really cool bit of info from Allison on meeting. Like, the first scene they shot together is an emotional one, so that kind of gives us a hint as to something that's going to happen in the film. Like, ooh, what are they talking about? What are they doing? And apparently a lot of playing with the hair in this movie. So
that's cute.
Yeah. Their hair all looks so nice. They probably can't help it.
I know. You just want to reach out and touch it. So Catherine then spoke on meeting Allison and said, the truth is that I saw Allison in a scene first. I got to watch her work a little bit before we did the improvisation. So I already knew she was a really good actor. So I went into the scene knowing I was with someone who would be able to hold up their side of the bargain. With things like that, when you're nervous and you're auditioning, to know you can trust your partner gives you confidence you might not otherwise have in that situation. So I think it's cool that they had kind of differing experiences of, like, Allison jumped into the situation with Catherine, like, you know, Catherine's acting and I'm reacting. And Catherine, she... saw Allison acting first, so she kind of knew what she was working with. I think that's cool, and their dynamic is definitely something I look forward to seeing on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's cool that we finally get a sister dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Other than never really the twins. That. Yeah, they, because it was more in the books than it was in the films. In the films, they appear in Goblet of Fire, they're like, hi, Harry, and he's like, hey, let's go to the ball.
Yeah.
That was that. So
an exact quote.
Yes.
I always, like, when I saw mentioned that Joe almost gave Hermione a sister, and I was like, that would have been cool, like, seeing how they work together, like, her being a muggle.
But it also...
been like, Lily and Petunia.
Yeah, it also would have been kind of tragic when she had to essentially wipe her memory.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Oh,
oh
no.
Sorry, I'm here to bring up the sad things.
Well, they would have been fine.
she went back. She would have gone back. But yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, she went back for her parents, but still, it's just like when you don't know initially, you're watching it and you're like, oh gosh, like this is so sad. All the pictures are fading and everything.
And
if you would have seen
movie.
That with a sister, yeah. Well, in happier news, Funko Pop,
yay!
Funko Pop Newt Scamander figure.
He looks so cute!
I think we should all get free ones since we host Speak Beastie.
I know.
I agree.
Funko
the
Pop?
Only,
you listening?
The only Funko Pops I have are all Star Wars. So I still need Newt Scamander, though, to sit next to all my Star Wars ones.
Harry Potter ones are great. I love the Hagrid one, how he's like so much bigger than all the other ones. It's so cute.
I've got a good mix, but I do have Dumbledore on my desk whenever I record, because it just, he's the only person I know from the Fantastic Beasts series, so.
I accidentally started a Harry Potter Funko collection. I didn't intend to, but my parents asked
that's how it always goes.
They like, my parents asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and I was like, I don't know, I guess like the Funko Pop figurines. Next thing I know, I have like all of them. Well, all that were there at the time of like Christmas.
I love when people, like, you say you want something and they take you so seriously, they're like, okay, get them all.
Literally, she, it was like a bag, not even wrapped, of just the Funko Pops. I was like, awesome. I mean, they're adorable and they protect my bookcase, but yeah.
Me too, but not Harry Potter. I mean, I have Harry Potter, but then I also have like Cogsworth and Rick Grimes and other other people.
There's more than just Harry Potter, right? I forget. Just forget. But yes, I agree. We all deserve to get them all.
We do.
Let's petition.
We don't need a petition. Apparently, J.K. Rowling just listens to our show and she'll just send us.
Yeah, that's right.
Send us some newts. Maybe she'll even send, like, exclusive, like, Queenie and an... Oh, God, I did Niffler. Oh, as I was saying it, I was like, wait, oh, gosh.
What about a Sasquatch?
What about the Bowtruckle?
I need... But if it's the Sasquatch, it needs to be in the classic Sasquatch pose, you know? Like,
yeah.
The arm swinging, head turned.
Yeah.
You listening, Funko Pop?
And now we've given them this idea, so they should pay us.
Yeah,
okay, Ariel. I knew she's gonna
I need money. Anyway, in more news, Dan Fogler was talking about his first meeting with Allison Sudol, because apparently everybody loves her, and having listened to her music in the past and just like her Twitter in general, how could you not? So Dan says, she's an angel. The moment I saw her, I knew her energy was just perfect. When she gets in the makeup, she's Queenie and she's got the lights on her. She's got skin that glows, you know? When I saw her for the first time, I was like, holy, ... It's Allison Monroe over there, Marilyn's cousin. She has that feminine, delicate quality about her that also lends itself to comedy in an Audrey Hepburn kind of way. And I think, like, I reading that, get the feeling that those two end up together in the movie. Like, something just kind of tips me off. I mean, yeah, you can talk highly about your co-star or whatever, but I'm like, if it's someone you have to be romantically involved with on screen, you're going to kind of talk about them in that way, you know? So.
And there's that picture of the two of them.
Yeah, they have the promotional pictures, and they're, I think in part of the clips you see them together. I know there was that one clip where they, it wasn't when they were filming, it was kind of behind the scenes or whatever, but they were together, and I remember thinking, I ship that.
There's also that scene where they're talking in the trailer where they're like, what, do you expect someone to marry him or something?
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. And he,
oh, shadower.
He gives that face, like,
what do you
crazy
mean?
Face. Yeah. So, in even more news, Fantastic Beasts is going to be at San Diego Comic-Con. So, another reason for me to be sad that I won't be able to go. Not only will there be new footage, but there's going to be a panel, Hall H, on Saturday, July 23rd, with David Yates, Colin Farrell, Ezra Miller, Eddie Redmayne, Allison Sudol, and Catherine Waterston. So, any of our listeners who, well, if you're listening to us, you obviously love Fantastic Beasts, try to go to the panel and let us know how awesome it's going to be, because
they better, like, release that footage.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in Comic-Con fashion, it always does get out, like, the next day.
Facebook Live it to us.
Yeah. We want to see it ASAP.
I know what we'll be talking about on the next episode.
So true. But in other exciting Comic-Con news, our own producer, Elena, will be on a panel called Fantastic Fans and Where to Find Them. It's Room 6A on that Sunday, starting at 10:15 a.m. So if you at all get any chance to go to either of these panels, please do, because one, it's the Fantastic Beasts cast, and two, it's our own producer, Elena, who I can speak for and say, like, she's amazing. She's the sweetest person ever, and she works so hard on this show, and I know she will give a lot of great feedback on that panel. So, absolutely, if you're going to San Diego Comic-Con, do those things.
Yeah, I wish I was there.
Yeah, right? Every year.
I mean, it's not even happening yet, and I'm like,
yeah. Every year. And I hate that they do those clues on Twitter, and I'm like, I can't, I'm not smart
enough. This
means
enough nothing to me.
Figure it out. Yeah, I'm like, what? It's numbers that, and colors, like, what?
Time.
Yeah, whatever. So, our last bit of news that we got comes from, and I apologize in advance if I'm butchering this last name. Somebody please let me know in the comments, because with a last name like mine, I hate when people mess up last names, so forgive me. Carmen Iogo, who plays Serafina Pickery, she got to talk a bit about how she personally had some influence on the character of Serafina. She said, it's been a lot of fun to come up with a look and a personality that has that element of otherworldliness. The costume for Serafina has been this wonderful evolution in the hands of costume designer Colleen Atwood, who we've spoken about a lot. Carmen went on to say, I said to her that maybe Serafina should have all these rings on her fingers, excuse me. I'm left-handed, actually, naturally, but I know that that's a very magical trait. I'd be thought of as a witch years ago. So I wanted to really emphasize my left hand, and I thought we could put rings on it. And the MuggleNet article goes on to explain how left-handedness and witchcraft kind of went into play, how it was associated with dark magic. So she wanted to take that and kind of spin it on its head and be like, look, I'm not dark. Like, I'm left-handed, and, you know, she's the president of MACUSA, so I like when people take things that are personal to them and bring them to the character. So I'm looking forward to that in the films. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
again,
really
with the mention
cool.
of, yeah, Colleen Atwood, she's amazing. We could have a whole show dedicated to her, so.
Yeah. I'm really excited just to see Serafina Pickery.
Oh, I know. Everything.
I hope she's in it a lot.
Yeah, we're going to talk a bit about her, actually, in the main discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Because she comes up.
That's right.
Yeah.
But everything I've seen of her on screen, I'm just like, oh, she looks so cool. I'm so excited to see what she's like.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they wouldn't have given us so much of her if they weren't, if she wasn't going to be such a main character, you know?
Mm-hmm. So that's it for this week's Phoenix Register. If you want to check out these articles, be sure to check out the Fantastic Beasts tag on MuggleNet. And now we have the Outpost with Haley.
Yeah. So today for Outpost, Shannon's sister, Colleen, actually sent us an email, which she said, I think people take the idea of houses a bit too seriously. Your house doesn't determine your entire life, which we stated a few episodes ago. The Harry Potter books are seen through the eyes of the student, and therefore houses are very important. However, adults don't discuss their houses unless it pertains to the children in the books. Many adults' houses were revealed outside of the story because it didn't seem to matter. I think that your house is similar to your high school or college mascot. You may be proud of a Hornet or a Mustang, but you might go and see games and cheer on your old team, but it doesn't determine the direction of your life and becomes less and less important as you grow older. Or you could think of it more as a fraternity or a sorority, like a community that can help you network in your adult life. Your house is a community of people who have similar who value similar things as you do. And as an adult, isn't as important to feel as part of a group and be part of these lasting friendships. While your house may say something about you as a person or a young person, the practicality of being a Gryffindor or a Wampus stops the moment you leave school. Your house will always be a part of your identity, but it doesn't become your whole identity. You continue to be proud of your house, but hopefully it doesn't determine who you choose to interact with or what career you pursue after school. And she also said that she's interested to see what roles that the houses play in Fantastic Beasts. I'm sure we'll learn Tina and Queenie's houses, but will they have any impact on who they are? Will they really be important to the story, or is it just an interesting piece of trivia? I think that's really interesting, too, of how much they'll actually talk about their houses.
Yeah.
And just about Ilvermorny in general.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I think about it, when you think about the Harry Potter series, like, how many adults do you see wearing,
Except, say, like, Lucius Malfoy.
Yeah, well, true.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But that's... Yeah. I think there's...
That's a whole other problem, like...
Yeah. That's a different thing. But, like, I'm thinking, like, in the Harry Potter series, you don't see a lot of adults wearing, like, say, their schoolhouse colors. And yeah. Fantastic Beasts, you see Newt walking around with his Hufflepuff scarf, so...
I feel like that also kind of begs the question, how old is he in this? You know, like, is he... Like, how long has it been since he's been to Hogwarts?
I think
he's, like, mid-20s. He's mid-20s-ish, yeah. Right? A little older. Yeah.
But it's, like, do you think that's kind of, like... Well, I'm still in my 20s. I'm still kind of attached to my school.
Yes,
when I'm older,
true.
I'm kind of like, yeah. That's when you're kind of like, yeah, whatever. I was in Gryffindor. I was in Hufflepuff.
Yes. He's like, 29.
Yeah, it's like the people still wearing the class rings after they've graduated.
Definitely. I feel like that's kind of the stage where he's in.
Well.
Yeah. And it looks kind of like a homemade scarf or like, someone made it for him. So it's kind of like, you have this scarf. It's cold.
Mm-hmm.
It's New York in the winter.
True.
He probably doesn't have another scarf.
Maybe also, it's more out of practicality. Like, he wasn't so much like, I want to show off Hufflepuff. He's probably like, I'm cold. This is what I've got.
Yeah.
Well, so, as a Greek life person, and, because the sorority comment, and just because I think it parallels nicely with the, like, wearing of your house colors, I definitely wore all of my sorority stuff all the time when I was in school. Not just because I had to, but just because that's where I was.
Yeah.
Which I think obviously correlates well to, you know, if, you know, their Ilvermorny uniforms or, you know, house colors and all that stuff. Now that I've been out of school for a year, I don't actively wear my sorority clothing as much. While I have my paddles on my wall, I think that's the same way that people have, like, their house banners.
Yeah.
I don't actively purchase new clothing. I don't, you know, I'm not, like, crafting.
Well, you think of it as, like, you know, in boarding schools, the point of houses is really just where you live.
Right.
And it makes that kind of, like, friendly or not so friendly competition, but, like, when you get out of school, it really doesn't matter beyond, like, making connections with people.
Yeah. We were in the same house.
I feel it's also kind of, like, from, like, our perspective, it's hard to be like, how can you not just, like, love Hogwarts forever? But it's like, then again, this is their school that they had to go to, and they're like, thank goodness, I'm out of school finally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very small part of your life, ultimately.
Yeah. Was it 7 years?
An important part of your life.
I think learning their houses, though, will definitely give us, like, a lot more insight on their characters, though, like, as people, mm-hmm. even though we don't mm-hmm. know too much about the houses yet.
Yeah.
We can tell that they're very different people, even though they're sisters, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah.
I think...
Even just knowing what their houses are will tell us more about those houses.
Yeah. Right. Also, it's, like, you're saying how other sisters and they're so different, it's, like, how, like, example for the Weasleys, they're all from the same family, they're all in the same house, and that's, like, the kind of family you get to see mostly. It's like, yeah, the Pavarti twins are in different houses, but you don't really get mm-hmm. to see much of that, so I think it'll be interesting seeing, perhaps, we don't know yet, if the sisters are in different houses.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. And especially with the sorting ceremony, how choice really plays a huge part at Ilvermorny compared to Hogwarts. Because, like, you know, it's kind of like the secret menu at Starbucks. Like, yeah, you do have a say at Hogwarts, kind of. But, like, at Ilvermorny, they're like, this is legit. Yeah, like...
That kind of feels like a very sorority fraternity thing to me. Kind of like the thing where it's like, you choose us and then we choose you kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, even though
teach
it's kind
me
of the-
and I'll teach you.
It all comes back to Pokemon.
Sorry.
Greek life is more of you choose us, we choose you, and then you have to choose us again, though.
Again, yeah.
It's very exhausting.
Do you really want us?
Lots of choosing.
Yeah, lots of choosing. Lots of, like, blind dates, essentially. That's basically what it all is.
Like, extreme blind dating, because it's like, you are in a family now, learn how to wine and dine real quick.
But one last thing I wanted to say about Shannon's sister's comment, and I forgot her name. Colleen, sorry. I like this idea because I don't know about you guys, when I took my Ilvermorny sorting test, I was excited to see what house I was in, but I wasn't necessarily as crushed or, like, elated about what happened, about where I got put, as I was when I first took the Pottermore Hogwarts sorting test. Like, if you think back, people were crushed. Identity crisis.
Yeah.
And that's because, like, we didn't learn anything about the houses until we had the quiz.
Yeah, and also it's, like, that there was, like, a good, like, depending on how early you got into the fandom, 10 years of dedication to your one house, and you're like, excuse me, what?
Yeah.
I had one of those moments.
The thing about sorting into Hogwarts, they give you this big, long page about this is the house, and this is...
Unless you're in Gryffindor, you get nothing.
And Ilvermorny...
You get it.
Ilvermorny, it's like... You're the heart, or you're the soul.
Your soul.
I'm like, okay, that I kind of get what
That's
you're
nice.
Saying, but it's also a little bit vague. So, Ilvermorny, people, if you haven't read it by now, it's on Pottermore/writing by J.K. Rowling/Ilvermorny with some dashes and dots and stuff in there. You can find it. It's really easy. But we're going to talk a bit about the main points. And,
just a bit.
Yeah, just a bit.
Skim through it.
So, I don't know where to begin. So it starts off with Isolde Sayre, who was born in and around 1603 in Ireland. Around the age of 5, her parents died, and come to find out it was her evil aunt Gormlaith Gaunt, and... Such a shocker here, an heir of Slytherin who's evil, what? So
what?
Never heard of it.
Unexpected plot twist. And eventually our girl Izzy found this out and realized I've got to get out. It was kind of, it's kind of Rapunzel-y, like when you think about it.
Because
Gormlaith is doing her best to keep Isolde like under her thumb, and she doesn't even let her go to Hogwarts. She tells her about it.
Magic.
Yeah.
She's got magic hair that glows. It's the exact same thing.
Same exact story. It's plagiarism, yeah. J.K. Rowling. So eventually Isolde steals Gormlaith's wand and runs off to America. And here's an excerpt from the story. Masquerading as a muggle boy called Elias Story, she set sail for the New World on the Mayflower in 1620. And I'm just like, oh, how lucky for her. She was on the most popular ship that the world knows about, crossing from the pond to the great New World of all the ships to be on. She's a boy named Elias Story on the Mayflower.
I wondered,
secretly Rapunzel.
I didn't actually look this up. I was wondering, like, when she picked that name, if she, like, went into, like, records of people on the Mayflower and be like, this person's a wizard, actually.
That's true. Did we look that up? Hold on, is that an actual person?
Are you gonna look it up?
I was wondering that when I read it.
Also, confession,
when you said
the most popular ship, all I thought was the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. Oops.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Elias Story. Nothing is known about Mayflower passenger Elias Story outside of the fact that he came in the care of the Edward Winslow family. He did not sign the Mayflower Compact, suggesting he was likely under the age of 18 or 21. He died the first winter at Plymouth, likely between January and March. So wow, she did totally take someone who actually existed.
Damn!
And was like retconned his life.
JK! Damn, JK.
I love that name, Elias Story.
Yeah.
It sounds like a really bad fake name.
I know.
But
it's
real. I was
real.
Wondering that. That's so cool.
So
rewrite history.
Huh. Interesting. And she also said he's a girl wizard, or girl witch, girl wizard, Ariel English. So, interesting. Huh. Learn something new every day. All right, so Elias' story was real, but he was actually apparently secretly Isolde Sayre. And so she...
Elias' story rolling in his grave somewhere.
It's like, that's not me!
What?
Eventually we get to her trying to live out her new life in America. She essentially killed Elias' story and did say that he died, which is interesting because he did die the first winter at Plymouth. So... she's living her life, doing her thing in America, and here comes the hide behind, being a little scary, crazy thing, and just disemboweling people, and a Puckwudgie comes up and saves Isolde, and now he's like, well, crap, I'm indebted to you, and it's... I'm sorry.
Even though... Puckwudgies don't like humans, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's funny because he's like, he saved her life, and then he's like, mad that he has, or no, wait, she saved his life, was it?
She saw him being attacked by the hide behind.
Yeah, sorry, okay. Yeah, so they don't like humans, she saved his life, and now he's like, now I owe you a life, like, this really sucks, but I'm gonna do it, and... so she names him after her father, because future plot point. So,
and it wasn't it like Puckwudgie's, like, it has a name, but it's not going to tell it.
Yeah, it wouldn't tell
yeah.
It. It's like the doctor.
Yeah. She's like, fine, I'll call you William. Like my father.
I think it's funny that they're related to goblins, too. Just, like, you already know how,
sense.
Like... begrudging they are towards wizards.
Yeah. Like, I feel like he just perpetually has his arms crossed and he's giving her the side eye.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they go off and become friends and have adventures. And then Isolde makes friends with a horned serpent. Now we've knocked out two of the Ilvermorny houses halfway through the story. And this guy, or girl, I don't know the gender of the serpent. He's super cryptic, though, because she goes it's and visits him. Okay. That works, too. I don't discriminate. But he gives her this, like, fortune cookie message and says, until I am part of your family is doomed. And she's like, I don't have any family. She's like, I don't know any people. I'm not related to anyone at this point. Except for my aunt that I've been running away from my whole life. So, not her whole life, but you know, whatever. Yeah. Then we're introduced to Webster and Chadwick Boot. Because the hide behind that we were initially introduced to at the towards the beginning of the story actually kills these two boys' parents. And Isolde...
Lovely.
Yeah, right? So Isolde actually enlists William, the Puckwudgie, to help save these boys, even though he's like, you know, they're pretty much dead. Like, just leave them alone. She's like, you know, if you help me save them, you're released of your duties. Like, you don't owe me a life anymore or anything. So they kill the hide behind, save the boys, and off Willie the Second goes to wherever it is that Puckwudgies go. And then we
please
come to find out.
Read what you have written in the doc. If you're not going to read anything else crazy that you wrote in the doc, please read this
but
one.
But I'm so stupid. Okay.
Do it.
Dim boys have magic. Oh, shit, what up?
What?
It's
I want
Dim
you
boys
to make this into a
magic
puppet show.
Webster and Chadwick Boot. It turned out they were part of a wizarding family, and their parents were just not so bright and got killed by the hidebehinds, but they're magical, and Isolde's like, cool, we're all magic. This works for the best. And then comes James Stewart, and he's a nomad, but he actually traveled with the Boot family, or wait, hold on. Meh. That's probably wrong. He traveled with someone and he was like,
well,
I think he
met them and he was part of their same like colony or something and they were like friends.
Yeah, he
with
knew
the
them.
Family.
Okay, yeah, he befriended them on the journey to America and he went to the forest to find them and apparently he found their disemboweled bodies and was like, I'm gonna, you know, give them graves. And graves that he dug by hand, mind you. And he didn't know what to do with the wands that he found. Because he's, a nomad. So, eventually, Isolde found him in this situation with the wands. The wand kind of backfired on him, because that's what happens when you're a nomad. And she took him back to heal him at her little cottage. And naturally, they fell in love, even though she was like,
just kidding.
She was all, oh, I'm gonna, you know, obliviate him and it'll be okay. Good. Yeah, but it never happened because she loved him. And I'm like, that's cute. So eventually
I got involved in the relationship and there was like a paragraph about them. And I was like, I ship it. I love it already.
Yeah, I'm a little sad we're never going to get to see this on screen because I'm like, that's so cute. Like,
okay, now you know how I feel about James and Lily Potter.
Well,
I think we all feel that
that's
way,
how everyone feels. This is not, this is not a revelation, Lizzie. You're not like, hey, here's what I want to see that no one ever talks about.
Man,
here's an idea.
I remember when Fantastic Beasts was first announced, I thought it was Marauders, like, something for 5 seconds, and I was so happy. I mean, I was still happy, but
yeah,
I thought I had it for once.
Back to the story at hand. She names her cottage Ilvermorny, like the cottage she grew up in, because you know when you're trying to run away from your aunt and you don't want her to know where you are, you totally name your current house after your old house, because you know that won't tip her off. So eventually the four people converged and created the four houses of Ilvermorny because they could. Webster created Wampus. Chadwick created Thunderbird. Isolt created Horned Serpent. And James went with Puckwudgie because the poor nomad didn't know too much about magical creatures. And that was the one he went with. The grumpiest.
Hey, you know. if that's what you identify with.
I went about having the story where he was like, let's name them after ourselves. Oh, wait, we have stupid names. We can't name the houses after ourselves.
I don't want a house named James. Chadwick Boot. House Boot.
I'd totally be in House Webster.
Oh my gosh, right?
They're not the worst names. It would have worked.
No.
It would really be James that would
like,
be
re- okay,
the problem.
But let's be realistic here. The four houses of Hogwarts. Like, who has those names?
Are you trying to tell me right now that the four founders of Hogwarts just made up new names and went by those names for the rest of their lives to sound cooler?
Well, all of their names have alliteration. All of their names sound really way too cool to be real. Mm-hmm. I know you're wizards and witches, but come on. I can believe in magic, but I refuse to believe your names.
And that these four people with very similar kinds of names just happen to become friends. Although, yeah. I guess if you find a person with a name that's like yours, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, we should stick together.
We should make a magic school. That's what we should do.
But I wouldn't have any friends. No one would be with my name. So, Isolt and James actually started to make wands. She would get what they needed for the inside of the wand, and he would craft the outside, because apparently no mages can make wands, and it's just that easy. So the story goes on, they make wands, they run a school, they have some babies. Gormlaith didn't like that idea so much.
They have one baby.
No, they have twins.
They had twins!
Didn't they?
Well, one was a squib.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, we'll get to that, okay? Right. We'll get to that. Because
I
have
this
issues.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so shut up.
You're right.
So anyway, Gormlaith came and made it really easy to... Well, Isolt made it really easy for Gormlaith to find her, and then Gormlaith... And I love how they add this in the story. They're like, she's so sinister, she used the name William Sayre as she was crossing over. And I'm like, yeah, of all the things she's done, I'd say that's probably, like, the least sinister and the most predictable.
And it's
like okay.
How would she even figure out that she used that name? Like,
yeah, it's not like she... Like,
it's just petty.
You're just doing it for yourself at this point. Like, no one's gonna be like, oh, guys.
Gormlaith muttering to herself, like, ha ha ha, yeah. I will use the name William Sayre. That'll really get this girl upset.
Just me and my wicked ways.
We don't suppose William Sayre is a name anywhere.
Oh gosh, we'll look that up later, because I can't do any more of this with my life right now.
You
I can't have
it.
These...
William L. Sayre High School in Philadelphia.
That's it, we
Continue.
Found it. That's secretly Ilvermorny.
You got it.
That's the, like, the muggle, like, the concealment charm. Okay, so anyway, Gormlaith came, and like the evil queen in a fairy tale that she is, she enchanted James and Isolt to sleep, and had no idea about the Boot Boys, because why would she? I don't even know how she knew about James, but sure. So, Webster and Chadwick come out with their homemade wands, and they're, you know, battling it out with their, what would, adopted great aunt? Is that what you would call her? Sure. So, here's an excerpt. Rage and magic could not wake Isolt and James, but the terrified screams of their daughters broke the curse. So, I added here, this is proof you're not a bad person if you cringe when babies cry, because apparently it's so powerful it can break a dark curse. So, again, with the power of love.
It's nice.
And it was James. And it just brought back so many memories.
Yeah.
Right. Man, so many of these things in this story were, like, reminiscent of Lily and James. Even the name James. Two teenagers managed to defeat an heir of Slytherin with the help of a Puckwudgie who only came to help because Isolde named it after her father, who she apparently called by his first name. So
yeah, that was weird. Yeah.
Who goes, William, because you want your dad? Like,
I don't know.
Nah. So yeah.
This is just a really real unrealistic part of the story. So.
And then she
took me right out of it.
Yeah. I was like, this, I'm done. I will believe no more. But then she plants Gormlaith's old, she doesn't plant it, she buries it, but it grows into a tree, essentially. And we're expected to believe that Ilvermorny was all-inclusive, despite America not exactly having a history of this, but sure, we'll accept this along with all the other things we've been told about this story. And here's where I have some real trouble. Everyone was happy, except for Martha, who was a squib. Like, what?
So sad.
What was so wrong with Martha that Joe needed to shit on her like that? Like,
wow. There's nothing wrong with being a squib.
But legit, the story even says, like, she was so devastated to be a squib. Like, she married a nomad and
just kind of vanished.
In a way, yeah, it feels like, why did she have to do that? It's like, James wasn't even, he didn't have any magic. It's like, he got to be head of the school.
Yeah, but it was painful for her to grow up at Ilvermorny when she was unable to perform magic. I'm like, your parents literally founded the magical school of America and you're a squib. Like, that is awful. That is tragic. And
yeah, what are you going to do at that school?
That is sad. I am sad for Martha.
At least she's not like Filch and they were like, okay, you can be the janitor. You can clean up everything.
But, you know, I have to say, like, that's all awful, but she has a lot of courage to do that. That she was able to, I know she did it because she was devastated, but she was still able to get up and go and create her own life, essentially. With the environment that, you know, she could for herself. Like,
yeah.
Sounded like she was, you know, happy when she did that.
It's not like Filch who kept sitting around with his quick squib or what was it called?
Quick spell.
Quick spell.
Quick spell, you know, waiting for the day for it to go through or anything. I feel really bad for her, but I give her a lot of, you know, courage and heart for wish she would have stayed in touch with her family.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, she was essentially the black sheep, and it just makes me so sad. It really does, because, man, come on. Anyway, enough about Martha.
She's not the main character.
Oh, gosh. So the Ilvermorny sorting ceremony, in my opinion, sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it.
I would actually, like, prefer that to the Sorting Hat. And then, sorry.
I just said yeah.
Oh, I just didn't want to interrupt if you had more to say.
No, I like the Ilvermorny Sorting Ceremony, and I like that. I mean, like, with Hogwarts, you have a say, but it's more vague about, like, how much of a say.
It's more like Harry says you have a say, and that's not saying much.
Yeah. And, like, with Ilvermorny, you still don't necessarily, like, maybe only one house will pick you, which then probably feels kind of bad because a lot of houses could pick you, but
maybe it's also, like, you feel like that you just exemplify that trait so much that that's, like, if you're trying to make yourself feel better, I guess, for just being picked for one.
And it's almost, like, more public in a way, because it's not like the hat whispering in your ear like, what if I put you in this house or this house? It's like, oh, here are all these like 2-3 houses that might pick you, and then that's just interesting.
Yeah,
and then you can choose which one.
I think we were talking about voice. I was about to say that, like, we were talking about this last time. It's kind of like The Voice, where they're like, we want you, and you kind of have to be like, ooh, who do I choose?
It's like bid day in Greek life.
Yeah.
Because basically, at those ceremonies, I've heard it done two ways. At my school, you would be extended, if you were extended multiple offers, you had to make a decision by noon, and then the organizations had no idea who you chose, so it was a surprise for the organizations when they read off the list of new members. And then I've heard it done at other schools where you make the decision then, and you're given, like, some schools do it where they have different color roses, like The Bachelor, essentially, and you go and you place a rose in, like, the vase of the organization you're choosing to be a part of.
That's cool.
It's, like, very public. It's this huge thing where, like, everyone, like, screams and hugs and, you know, runs America. Around. Yeah, America.
I feel like that is kind of, like, there is kind of a very American way of doing things, which is kind of interesting that it is at the American school, like, doing it that way.
I think it's really epic. Like, imagine you're, like, standing in the middle and you have, like, these four, essentially, like, these four pillars surrounding you, and you, like, hear them going off and, like, this triumphant, like, I want you. Like, that feels, that probably feels really good.
Yeah. I feel like that's the one, like, actually American thing that J.K. Rowling got right. Like, yes, we would do this.
We would do this. I also feel like, just for the little things I hear about the houses and how they're created, I feel like there's going to be less house divide at Ilvermorny. Like, it doesn't really seem like there's that much, like, tension between houses here. And also the fact where it's, like, you do get to choose, and you know what I mean? It just doesn't seem like there's so much aggression between the houses here.
And I assume that it is still, like, living with your house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, I don't think, does it say Ilvermorny is a boarding school? Like, I would assume it does. So, because you gotta travel there.
It probably is.
It is.
Yeah, like, it eventually became one.
With the wands and stuff, where it's like, I actually really like this part, where they're saying that you only get your wand in America when you come to Ilvermorny, and you have to leave it there during the summer, which is kind of, like, obvious, like, you should do that. Like, that makes
total sense.
Do you
know how much trouble Harry would have been saved from if he just left his day wand?
Seriously. Hogwarts, implement this. Learn from your friends across the sea.
So, well, that's so cool.
Yeah, well, it...
I'm imagining, like, 13-year-olds being like, I can't do my summer vacation because I don't have my wand.
Well, how were we talking about earlier, the interview with Carmen about Serafina Pickery and how Facebook ties into Facebook? I'm reading the stupid doc, and I looked at, and I was like, Facebook, not Fantastic Beasts, because it's F-A-B-E. I'm like, an idiot. Ah.
You're not
So
an
how
idiot.
Serafina Pickery and how Fantastic Beasts ties into this, because she was the only witch of her generation to have all four houses want her, and she chose Horned Serpent. And
it's pretty cool.
And, like, that, it, the more information we get about this character, like, it kind of ties into this idea, like, she's so powerful and awesome that all four houses wanted her, and she chose the one that favors scholars. Which, of course, you know, the house descriptions aren't very, they aren't very plenty, but you get a little bit. Like, the mind is represented by Horned Serpent, the body Wampus, the heart Pugwudgie, and the soul Thunderbird. So, Horned Serpent being scholars, Wampus warriors, Pugwudgie healers, and Thunderbird adventurers. So, it's kind of this, I mean, I'm sure we'll get more information as time goes on, but I also wonder, like, maybe just because, like, how they were just kind of sitting around and, like, hey, I like this animal, and this is who I am as a person, because, of course, it goes on to tell, like, what happened with Chadwick and Webster and, like, what they went on to do, and it kind of makes sense with the respective houses that they chose, or animals for the houses, so... Yeah, I just think it's not as... It's a little more open-ended than Hogwarts. I appreciate that about Ilvermorny.
There's a lot of discussion about, like, how these houses connect to the Hogwarts houses. I almost said Facebook. I love, like, I don't think there's any perfect system.
No, I don't either.
To look at that.
I really like the theory where it's like Hogwarts houses are kind of like what you want to do or what you want, like what you aspire to be. And then Ilvermorny are the reason why you do those things or what drives you to do those things.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
For the record, I am in Wampus.
Me too.
Really? And, yeah. I've not met that many Wampus people.
And I definitely identify like in that warrior like category. Not to say that I go out and I fight crazy battles, mm-hmm. but just the idea of like I fought
Pokemon
a lot.
Go.
I have 49 Pokemon and like 10 mosquito bites, so I kind of want to say it's a little worth it.
You are a warrior.
I'm literally that's it.
My sister was also sorted into Wampus, which we're both Ravenclaws. And it's like, we didn't expect that.
I didn't expect Wampus.
But, and we were kind of like warriors. And then I was like, well, I guess we like have very strong opinions and beliefs and we'll fight for those. So. Yeah.
You know, I honestly, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say about Thunderbird when I got sorted, I was immediately like, yeah, I'm into that. Oh, because also I'm in Gryffindor too. And I feel like the two kind of work together very well. Because I go on trips all the time. I love going places. And I'm like, I'm totally cool with this house. Because at first I was obviously in the mind bird Ravenclaw. What? But then like when I read it, it made a lot of sense.
I kind of wanted to be in Thunderbird, but I don't know why. It just sounded cool. Wampus is cool.
I kind of wanted Horned Serpent. I don't know why.
I thought I was going to be Puckwudgie because that's kind of the Ravenpuff house. And then I got Thunderbird and I was like, what?
Yeah, see, it's
me?
No perfect match.
But, oh no, I know. But I'm just saying like, if it's kind of like when we were talking about Eric's whole graph thing.
Yeah.
Which I still think is interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Cool, I wouldn't say it's completely accurate, but it's one way to look at things, definitely. But I don't know. I kind of expected to be Puckwudgie, and then I got Thunderbird, and I wasn't, like, disappointed or anything. I was just like, well, that's not the one I thought I was going to get. It's interesting how, because they ask you all those questions, and you get, like, 10 different answers. And even the one where it's like, you're asking a question.
That question was what's so the weird. Answer?
Yeah, because I'm like, you kind of have to word the question a right way. And even then, you don't really know. I don't know. It was definitely an intense quiz that made you think more than the Hogwarts.
That one was definitely more intense.
Yeah, Hogwarts one is like, do you want to go towards the castle or the river? And I'm like, I like castles.
Yeah. I saw a post. It was like, Hogwarts house sorting, lake or forest, Ilvermorny house sorting, would you kill a baby? And I was like, yeah, that's accurate. That's what it was like.
The moment I got to the question where it was, think of the one question you want answered the most and pick what answer you would hope to receive. That I was like, what? It's like, first of all, I have to think of a question.
It's like, now I should do salsa tomorrow.
Yeah, there were a lot of answer choices too, and I was just like, this is harmful.
Yeah.
It was,
when Steven was taking it, bless his poor soul, the first question only had like two answers. So, of course, he went through and he's like, okay, yeah, I'll pick this one. The next one had, like, five, and he only went through two of them and answered. I was like, no! I was like, you did it wrong! But eventually, and of course, with that sort of thinking, he ended up in Horned Serpent. Scholars. But I'm just kidding. He's smart. It was just like, I didn't know until I got to the one, it was one that was like four answers and then one that was like two. I was like, they're not all four? Like what? Like I'm confused. So it was the opposite for me, but it's just like it really was so intense. I was like, what? Why? It's a lot.
And I wonder if it was like made that way. So because we don't know these houses, we're not connected, that it's like, oh okay, those questions were intense. This must be right. Like I have to listen to it. You know what I mean? Where it's like you have in your mind, you're like, I guess I trust it since it asked me such in-depth questions.
Yeah. So finally, you know, everyone's happily ever after, and we find out the robe colors are inspired by Ravenclaw and Pi, which sounds right up my alley. And then we find out that William the Puckwudgie still roam the halls, being generally grumpy, but effective at security.
And hey, we don't know that it's the original.
I'm willing to bet that it is.
I think so, too. Yeah.
And they say he still lays flowers at Isolde's grave, and I'm just like, come on. So, yeah, that's it for our Ilvermorny discussion, which went in 500 directions. but we have a lot of feelings. We can't help it.
So how do we think it will connect to Fantastic Beasts? Because I don't think it will actually connect that much.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think we might see some students, but I don't think we'll go to the castle.
Yeah.
I wish we did, but I mean, I can only hope.
I think if it connects...
At least not in the first movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it connects, it's going to be like in 2 or 3 or something. I don't think it's going to be 1.
We'll find out, like, Tina and Queenie's houses. Yeah. They'll mention Ilvermorny, but other than that.
I wonder if they'll ever argue, be like, Hogwarts is better. No, Ilvermorny's better. I wonder if they'll
get maybe that'll be the Dumbledore tie-in. Like, Dumbledore took a visit.
Ooh, actually, speaking about Dumbledore tie-in, I'm reading Deathly Hallows right now, to get ready for Cursed Child, and I was reading the part that's, like, the backstory, like, about Dumbledore and stuff. And they mentioned when Harry was looking at the picture of his mother that she looked very Native American. And I was like, is his mother, like, American or tied to, like, that part of the Wizarding World? I remember reading that and be like, Joe, did you know about this earlier? What's going on?
That would be interesting.
That'd be really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Joe does it again. Back at it again with the well-planning.
Foreshadow.
Back at it again.
I was going to say, back at it again with the white people.
Oh my gosh.
Oh boy.
Shall we move on?
Yes.
Yas.
So, for the time turner this week, we're going to look at something we've talked about a lot, but we're going to establish the facts, because we keep getting them wrong. Because we get them wrong, and then my sister calls me and is like, this is wrong. So... The Salem Witch Trials. Big deal. We happened from February 1692 to May 1693 in Massachusetts. Not just in Salem, in a lot of towns, but Salem was kind of the core of it. 20 people were killed, and 19 of them were hung. One person was pressed to death by stones. So no burning at the stakes, even though that one... video would lead us to think otherwise, but whatever, Pottermore. And 14 of them were women. And then 5 more people died in prison, including 2 infants that were born in prison because their mothers were in there. So that's really sad. And so the general, like, history, I'm going to be honest here, most of what I really knew about Salem Witch Trials comes from The Crucible, which I read years ago. So this was just kind of the quick history that I found and put together. So it kind of started, there had been, like, witch trials before this, but this was a new wave, like, there had been witch trials in America. And it started when these 2 girls, Betty Paris and Abigail Williams, started acting really weird. They complained that they felt like they were being pricked and pinched, and they were kind of having these weird fits and things. And the doctor determined that they weren't epileptic, basically. They were obviously cursed by a witch. So they ended up accusing 3 women, Sarah Good, Sarah Osborne, and Tituba. And so those were the first 3 accused, and then slowly more and more people were accused of witchcraft, and they were all kind of people who, you know, they didn't go to church or disagreed with the church somehow, or they were, like, otherwise outcast in some way. Shockingly, the rich leaders weren't accused of witchcraft. And the court of Oyer and Terminer? I really should have looked up how to pronounce all this.
That seems right, though.
You got this.
How else would it be pronounced? But they, so that was the court that was established for trying all of these people. So one particular event was Giles Corey was the one person. One particular event was that Giles Corey was the one person who was pressed to death by stones. They were trying to get him to enter a plea, and so just slowly set stones on him for 2 days. And he refused, and he was 81 years old. Like, he was a badass. So yeah, so 20 people died. Within a few years, like literally by like 1697, everyone started to be really like, that was probably bad. And like, one of the court clerks like apologized and stuff, which is nice and all, except for the 25 people who were murdered.
Yeah, it's funny. But I actually had a U.S. history like last semester, and mm-hmm. There was a lot of discussion too that the town, the water supply of the town itself, was actually laced with drugs, like with some like plants and things that had like for drugs that have like a lot of hallucinogen properties. So
it's possible.
It's most likely this whole town was like was totally high, was all totally crazy, and that was a big part of the problem.
So yeah, it sucks. But now we know exactly what happened, because we, in the past, have been kind of like, the Salem Witch Trials, people were burned? No? What happened? So it'll be interesting to see, like, how much the Salem Witch Trials connect, and if she uses, like, real people's names in any history that she writes about them. Because we have everybody's names who was involved. And that's it for the time turner, unless anyone has anything to add.
I just have to reiterate, it was really misleading for Jill to have that artwork of them burning. So that's why
what happened in England.
Yeah, that made me think of that story where they're like how people. I think it kind of deals with how the people in Harry's like textbook said that they just put a charm and they weren't burned, but then in that little excerpt story she wrote that it was like. Because it was wizards who were disguised as, like, people, they are actually using, like, magic fire that could kill them instead. So.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's, like, so much about the Salem Witch Trials. This is, like, very, very minimal information because I was like, I can't even sit here and read, like, everything that happened. So we could do, like, hours about the Salem Witch Trials, but we won't. But if anybody, like, is interested in them, you should look up more information. Because it's like, we know everything that happened. It was a lot of stuff.
All right. Shall we move to the new case?
Let's do it.
Open
that case.
Okay.
What's inside?
So this week for the new case, we are going to be looking at the Wampus Cat. And forewarning, it's kind of upsetting me that because I am a proud Wampus, and it is slightly terrifying, especially for Ariel. She will come to see. Well, here.
I'm not listening.
Oh, you're gonna. You want to hear this one. So, to begin, they are. It was mentioned in the Ghost Cats of the South by Randy Russell, and there are some other random accounts, but a lot of it is mainly anonymous. So the most common story is of a young Cherokee woman who spied on her husband on a hunting trip. Some of the stories say she was worried that he was cheating. Some say that she wanted to go hunting as well. Some even say it wasn't a hunting trip, but actually a secret council meeting. But everyone agrees that women were not allowed, whether, you know, it was hunting or whatever was going on. Women were not allowed, so she wanted to know what was up. She disguised herself by wearing the skin of a mountain lion, so think panther, puma, you know, etc., and followed the hunting party. When she was caught, the elder in the party cursed her for her transgression, and she was turned into the Wampus Cat. Now the cat...
The ice cream man?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
The Wampus Cat is described as being half cat, half woman, but looking more or less like a really big mountain lion. So some descriptions say that it has the face or the eyes of a woman, though, and many say that its stare is hypnotizing, which it uses to not just kill people, but completely devour them. Some stories say that it smells like the cross between a skunk and a wet dog, and I'm offended. And it also has a scream like a woman's. Also offensive. But I'm thinking like the American, like I'm thinking like psycho kind of woman scream.
Yeah.
Ilvermorny has the symbol with six legs, but from what's been found, it either walks on four or it stands upright on two. There are a lot of images with six legs, but there's nothing that says it's randomly sprouted two extra legs. Now, here we go, Ariel. Prepare yourself. Sightings are all over the South, as recent as 2007, but most of them are anonymous, and a lot of them center around Tennessee and the Appalachian Mountains. There are also legends...
I'm nowhere near those!
There are also legends that the Wampus Cat stalks the underground tunnels of the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. Sightings were also signaled with a shotgun shot. So the best advice if you do encounter a Wampus Cat is to keep your head down. Apparently, if you look it in the face, it not only hypnotizes you, but the Wampus Cat gets offended because it's ugly, and then it kills you. Again, offended. So
I love it.
It might. Okay. So it might let you pass if you don't look at it. And
that is exactly the kind of fear I want to instill in people. Do not look at me, or I might kill you.
It's very true.
I like this Wampus.
So here's a little funny story. During the 1920s, the men of southwestern Virginia and some other parts of northwest Tennessee would use the old tales of the Wampus Cat to their own advantage in a funny way. Whenever an especially good batch of moonshine had been distilled, a shotgun was fired as a signal for the guys to gather up and have a drink of the illegal booze. To avoid suspicion from the women, the men told their wives that the Wampus Cat had been seen in the area and that they needed to hunt it down and destroy the beast before it could kill or otherwise hurt anything. Good old men. Good job, guys. Good job. And then, last thing that's noteworthy. The Wampus Cat and the term cattywampus have crossing histories. It's hard to tell what came first, since the Wampus Cat story wasn't really published until the 20th century, but it was passed along through oral tradition. But the term cattywampus dates back to the 1830s, when its meaning was utterly and completely. Since then, it's been used to mean things that are crooked, askew, banged up, diagonally, as in a catty corner, and as a term meaning something ill-meaning or ill-tempered, very much like the Wampus Cat.
We gotta start using this word again.
Cattywampus. Oh,
people, I live in the South. People do use it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I've heard it before, but not like as something that people actually say.
No, like people actually say it, like seriously.
I love it.
That's amazing.
I love it all. Shall we wrap this up? Do we have a podcast question?
No, but I do have something really cool. Amy Hogan told me that at Leviosa in Vegas, the MuggleNet staff met a Speak Beastie fan. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, she listens to all the MuggleNet podcasts, but she really loves ours. So I thought
we've got one fan.
I thought that was really cool to share quickly with you guys.
Yay,
hello,
to our fan.
If you're listening.
We love you too.
We think you're the bee's knees.
So that's it for this show. Remember to send us your fantastic theories, comments, questions, really anything, because we want to read what you have to say. We want to hear what you have to say. Tell us what you think of Ilvermorny and all of this. And thank you, Lizzie and Haley, for being on today.
Of course. Of course. Happy to be back.
And to contact Speak Beastie, you can always find us on Twitter and Instagram at Speak Beastie, or you can always look at us up on Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie. We also have a Tumblr, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And just a reminder, as always, that Speak Beastie is on Patreon, and for as little as $1 per month, you can become a sponsor of Speak Beastie and help us bring to you more of Newt's fantastic world. And you can find out more about our sponsorship rewards and how to become a sponsor at patreon.com/speakbeastie.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Haley.
I'm Lizzie. Case closed. Or, you know, house colors and all that stuff. But since graduating, I've been out of school for like a year now. I definitely.
I'm sorry. I don't know what that noise was, and it really. It just really caught me off guard because it was like, ding! like what you were saying was just like, yes, so true. Oh, I'm sorry. I just lost it. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Oh gosh, what was that noise? What was that? Someone please explain it.
I don't know.
What was the ding? Oh gosh, I'm sorry.
It's a mystery.
What was it though? It was
like I think I might have dinged my lamp when I was like shifting.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, guys. It's been a day, okay? Oh gosh, I'm crying. It's not an episode unless Ariel's crying about some stupid shit. Okay.
Igor's gonna name the episode What's the Ding?
What's the Ding? It sounds then, like, what's the cinch? What's the ding?
And then if he doesn't include it in the episode, people are gonna be like, what is the ding? What is it?
We'll never know.
He doesn't even include any of our conversation about it. He just calls the episode What's the Ding?
I'm so okay with that.